Hi, everyone. You're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. Today, we have another takeover episode led by pharmacy specialists who will give an inside look at a day in the life of an oncology pharmacist. From managing complex therapies to supporting patients through challenging treatments, our guests share the dedication, expertise, and moments that make this role so vital. Whether you're a fellow pharmacist, a student, or just curious about what goes on behind the scenes, this episode is just for you.
So we're all kind of gathered here today because we would just kind of want to give listeners an insight into what it's like to be an oncology pharmacist, kind of the good, the bad, the ugly, and go into a little bit of each of our roles and how the real practice of an oncology pharmacist can vary and that there's so much opportunity and availability within the field.
I think we have a good spectrum of people in their different career paths and different avenues as well. So I think hopefully it'll be interesting for some folks and students through residents or early practitioners. If you're looking for ideas or things to go into for your future, hopefully this will help. Well, Danielle, do you want to kick us off and talk about yourself a little bit?
Sure. So my name is Danielle Eskins. I am both a BMT pharmacist, cellular therapy pharmacist, and malignant heme pharmacist. So I juggle a lot of different hats in my role. I completed residency at the University of Louisville. I did both my PGY1 and PGY2 there. I did my pharmacy school at East Tennessee State University. And then I've been with Prisma Health here in Greenville, South Carolina for just over 3 years in my role.
My name is Ryan Shaw. I'm a clinical pharmacy practitioner at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill.
I've been doing this a little bit longer. I graduated from UW in 2005 and then 2009 with my pharmacy degree. Did my first year of residency in multi-care health system out in Tacoma, Washington, master at Duke for my PGY2. My career path has been a little bit longer, I guess, in the sense where I started as a inpatient oncology float, covering both solid tumor, bone marrow transplant, and malignant heme. Mostly my interest was in malignant heme and bone marrow transplant at that time. I fell in love with malignant hematology courtesy of Jeff Almgren at the VA in Puget Sound. So if anybody knows him, tell him that I give him a shout out on this. And over time, I had I'm very grateful to the manager that I worked with because she let me kind of morph my career, although not changing my job description, to being primarily heme and BMT over the 5 years that I worked with Duke. Moved over to University of North Carolina in 2015, and I've been here since then, primarily doing only bone marrow transplant and cellular therapy. I did inpatient only that whole time until 2023, and now I moved over into a role that rotates between the ambulatory transplant cellular therapy clinic and the inpatient service. So it's kind of a unique split position between the inpatient outpatient services.
My background's probably going to be pretty darn short since I've been a pharmacist for a year and a half, but my name's Chris. I'm a current PGY2 oncology resident. I went to both undergraduate and pharmacy school at The Ohio State University down in Columbus, Ohio. PGY1, I did it at University Hospitals up in Cleveland and decided to early commit after I loved a couple of my oncology rotations. I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit later. But so far, I've done kind of a variety of both inpatient and outpatient rotations, kind of building on my experience. But so far, throughout these 6 or 7 months, I've gained a love of malignant hematology and bone marrow transplant. I've had some fantastic preceptors leading me in that direction. And so kind of the current life space where I'm at right now are applying to jobs to kind of pursue for my first kind of career job and you know, follow that.
And then I'm Alexis Kuhn. I am a PT monk pharmacist over here at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I am based in the clinic space, but that's not where I thought I would end up being when I started my journey. So I went to pharmacy school, both undergrad and pharmacy school at the University of Utah. And then for my PGY1, matched at Mayo for the pediatric PGY1, which was a peds PGY1 at that time. Knowing that I wanted to go into peds hemonc, I then stayed on at Mayo for our PGY2 hemonc. And then I took a peds hemonc specialist position in a hospital straight out of residency. I loved it. I thought the inpatient space was where I was going to be. And then Mother Mayo came knocking. They opened a PT Monk position in the clinic. And having loved my time at Mayo, I came back here in 2020 to establish a clinic role. And as I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, that that unexpected change moving into the ambulatory space is one that now I'm so grateful for and can't imagine kind of going backwards. But that's where I am today.
All right. So I think now we've kind of given a good overview of kind of where we all started and how we got to where we are now. So maybe we can kind of talk about, you know, the current reality of our practice side and kind of what the day-to-day duties look like, tasks that we're associated with, all that good stuff. So I can start. So my role is pretty unique. I'm in like kind of a quasi-academic community study. So there's a lot of nuances to that. And I am also the only clinical pharmacist for both inpatient and outpatient. So each day in the mornings, I'm in the hospital rounding on the patient service. And again, we're seeing malignant heme, cellular therapies, and bone marrow transplant. So it can get pretty lively at times. And then in the afternoons, I'm typically in clinic. And my clinic days can vary. There's never like one set sort of schedule of what that's going to look like. Some days it feels like drinking out of a fire hose. It's just kind of whatever fire needs to be put out that day. But within the context of my clinic role, that's where I do a lot of my administrative tasks. So I serve on the BMT subcommittee. So I work really closely with our director on updating and shaping our policies. And we just spent a good amount of time going through our vaccine policy and making updates to that based off of, you know, new literature, new guidance, things like that, and presenting that to the provider group for discussion and approval. I'm also involved with some of the informatics side of things and helping with new treatment plan builds and reviewing our current treatment plans every quarter or annually. And then sometimes I get pulled into like patient education and then just serving as kind of like a resource for the outpatient staffing pharmacist. So there are a lot of different tasks and roles that I have within the setting that I'm in. But it makes it very interesting, and there's no day is ever the same, which is kind of what I enjoy about my role. And then obviously the provider group, which we'll kind of get into a little bit more as far as the collaboration and kind of why this field is so exciting to me. But the nice thing is I don't do a ton of like order verification. I have a staffing component to my role, which I think most folks do, but it's pretty minimal. So I get to really be hands-on and like very clinical, top of my license, get to spend a lot of time reviewing literature and spending time with data, which is something that I really, really enjoy about my role.
We're going from kind of, it sounds like a very central person from pharmacy being involved with all these different things to being, I'm one of four. So kind of the opposite end of staffing in the transplant cellular therapy space here. And we have one other person who essentially does what I do, and we alternate months between inpatient and outpatient. We have a full-time outpatient provider, and then we have a full-time inpatient provider. So we have kind of a couple different people that can serve as a continuity in those different spaces. And then I've really enjoyed the opportunity to kind of have a toe on both sides, especially after doing inpatient for so long. Similarly, I didn't really think that I would be moving into like the clinic space. But the nice thing about bone marrow transplant and cellular therapy, there's always chances to evolve your career. And after being practicing for, you know, 12 years inpatient only or 13 years inpatient only, it was nice to have like this refreshing change, but be able to stay within a patient population that I love and disease states that I love and the community that I love without having to go somewhere else. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit later with the pressures and of our workspace and the lingering call to industry that people seem to be constantly faced with. But my day-to-day activities, I think, in general, can be pretty similar. I feel like most people's inpatient experience is pretty similar, right? Like you have the structure, you have rounds, you have the interdisciplinary team, you're seeing patients, doing education, discharge counseling, things like that. And clinic is exactly what you talked about, Danielle, where you never know what your day is going to look like. You may have the biggest list because so we actually have a templated schedule. So we know our patients that were coming in, which is a little different than some other clinics. You may only have like three or four people on your schedule and it is the busiest day you've possibly ever had. And then you may have nobody on your schedule and it's even busier. And you can never predict exactly where that day is going to go. But that makes it kind of fun and more interesting. We've had luck here because I think we have the division of labor where we don't have one single person responsible for those administrative tasks. So we're able to divide some of those things up to different people. So I've been able to get involved with several different research projects over the years. And we have one of our BMT pharmacists is our residency coordinator for our PGY2 program. We have one that, you know, does a lot of onboarding and all these cellular therapies that are coming out. And she's kind of taking point with that logistics and keeping clinic flow going. So I think we're able to adapt our jobs into things that keep us motivated and interested in the field, which is, again, I think something unique to bone marrow transplant cellular therapy for sure.
And I'll piggyback off of you, Ryan, there with the very accurate description of clinic life. And much like Danielle, so in the ped space, you know, even though I'm at Mayo Clinic, which if you recognize the name, it's a pretty big medical institution, but the children's center within is actually a much smaller entity within the greater Mayo Clinic whole enterprise. And for our pediatric practice, given that we're smaller, we're definitely more condensed. And I am one of two. So I have one partner here in the clinic with me, and we wear all of the hats. So we wear the solid tumor oncology. We do malignant heme. We do non-malignant heme. We do transplant and cellular therapy. And so our day today is very much, you know, you could be meeting with a patient to discuss their targeted therapies for their brain tumor. And then you're going to pivot because you got like a pre-allo kiddo who needs transplant counseling before they go in for their allo BMT. And then you've got this kid with sickle cell who just got discharged from a vaso-occlusive crisis. So we're reviewing his individualized pain plan. And so in this role, I'm just constantly on my toes, which I think back now, it's been almost 6 years and it's like just a blink. It's time flies when we're having fun. But of course, with that, all of the ancillary workflow that comes into, given that we're a smaller practice where we have 10 or 11 providers, we are predominantly the ones that pull in the beacon plans for them and modify as the patients need. If you've got a baby, we got to be mindful of doing infant dose adjustments, any sort of organ function adjustments. We're making those and we're serving as one of those co-signers. So like Ryan said, even if you don't have a patient on your calendar that day or multiple patients on that calendar, the day goes very quickly. I'm just working through all the other chemo kiddos and then all the beacon treatment plan intake forms and validations for the studies and then all the med questions from moms and dads who have very valid questions for their kids. So the days go very fast, but truly an incredibly rewarding existence. It's just going too quick for me.
And I can quickly touch on about how life kind of differs a little bit as a resident, as opposed to all of our great, clinical pharmacists that are providing all these services to patients. My days also have those aspects, but also a large emphasis on learning as well. And so probably in the morning, I spend much more time working up patients, as a big emphasis on residency is not only learning the clinical information, but also learning and kind of perfecting your process. So learning how to go through patients, what to look for, when to look for drug-drug interactions, and really identify the most important things to bring up when you have such a busy day, and also working on that efficiency. When I first started in working some of these clinics, I was just, my jaw dropped on the amount of patients that were coming in and that pharmacists were seeing every day. And so, teaching myself, even if I know what to look for, I have to learn how to do that much more efficiently so I'm able to provide all those patients a level of high-quality care. And so a lot of emphasis on those, a lot of emphasis on doing literature review, on doing guidelines review. I'm kind of keeping up with all these different updates as I don't have a lot of that experience in each area. And the way that we do it is that depending on the rotation, it might either be a 4-week rotation or a 2-week, which means depending on the month, you might, start on a new disease state you've never seen 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks later, it's all of a sudden a completely different thing. Maybe you went from breast cancer to a lymphoma service, and now you're complete world has been turned upside down. And so learning how to manage those kind of troughs and valleys and the complete change of disease states is very interesting as well. And then we also have a big emphasis on different administrative tasks. So we have, a medication use evaluation, a research project, presentations every 2 to 3 weeks, types of things like that. teaching ourselves the process of learning how to make those presentations, make them efficiently, know how to go through that data, and really understanding the process of quality improvement and things like that. And so really, I would say probably not providing as much clinical care as a lot of our specialists who are really great at providing that, but kind of a greater emphasis on learning and kind of refining that process.
Thanks, Christopher. I think we all kind of touched on this, but I wanted to spend a little bit more time. Obviously, our roles don't exist in a vacuum, and so we work really closely with all of our other collaborators, so other pharmacists, other providers, other specialties. So I thought we could take a few minutes to kind of talk about how those impact the job role and kind of what those dynamics can look like and kind of how those play into the job role overall. So at my practice site, I've got 4 physicians that I work with closely, and then a handful of APPs. And so that's one of the things that actually drew me to my role is that it's a small enough group that you get really close connections and you really get to know the people that are on your team and have a really strong team bond and dynamic. And so that's one of the things that I was looking for when I looked for, you know, different job roles when I was applying. But I didn't realize how vital that would be to work-life balance, to overall well-being, just having people that, you know, are in the trenches with you every day and are as passionate about what you do and taking care of patients. So that's been something that's been really, really rewarding in this role and has been a little bit of a change, I would say, from the dynamic I saw in residency. I think that every team, every health system has different dynamics. And so that's something that if there's people out there that are on kind of the job hunt, that I would recommend kind of really spending some time to kind of investigate and look like what those team dynamics look like and what you think is going to work for the practice setting that you see yourself in the future. Part of what's interesting about my team, I feel like, is it's an all-female team, which I feel like is kind of unique. and so it's been kind of interesting to see. And like I said, we form very close relationships and all of the providers were really welcoming from the get-go. And it's been really refreshing to see how much they rely on pharmacy. Like, I will get calls, emails, texts on the daily asking for, you know, recommendations or, you know, I've got this complex patient. I'm thinking about this regimen. Like, what are your thoughts? Or, you know, have you seen any newer data that you think would be applicable to this patient? And so being able to kind of like really be involved in some of those patient discussions has been also very, very rewarding. And like I said, working with all of the other specialists, so the APPs, the nurses, they really just kind of enhance the experience. And it's interesting to see the thought process of when it comes to patient care from those different aspects. Because sometimes I get siloed in my little, you know, pharmacy bubble and I'm thinking of things from like a drug perspective. But when I'm not thinking about it necessarily from like a nursing perspective or something else, we had a situation actually come up today where we had a patient that's coming in for transplant and we're kind of trying to figure out date of admission. What do we think is going to work best? Because they'll start their conditioning on a weekend, which from a pharmacy standpoint is not my favorite because we just have a more of a skeleton crew. But then the nurses were telling us that, you know, from a perspective of actually infusing the cells, making sure that that doesn't occur on a weekend is actually more important and more, not more important, but has a bigger impact on staffing and with the blood connection, getting the cells prepared and delivered. And so it's just different aspects that you don't always think of. And so part of what I enjoy about the job is learning from those different resources and learning from different perspectives. And I think that just makes you more well-rounded as a professional, but also as a person too. So I think that's something that's I think occurs in every different specialty, but I think within oncology specifically, those relationships and those connections with your team members are so vital and so important. So, I don't know if anybody else has similar thoughts or other things that they want to share.
Yeah, you know, I think that's right. I think, you know, the relationships you establish can like make or break the job, you know, like, you can have the best job on paper, but if it's a dysfunctional team, then you're not going to be successful there. And I mean, I guess this is more for Chris than other people on the call, since I hopefully you both are happy with your current roles. But as you're looking for things, like it's hard to tease that out in an interview when you're going places for your first post PGY2 job, right? But I think that there, you can get a feel for how those teams function together. And if you have red flags, or if there's like something in your gut that is like, oh, that felt a little weird, like listen to that, you know, like that, that's important to know how those team dynamic works. And I've been very lucky both with from my PGY2 onto Duke and UNC, like the teams that I've worked with directly have been very, very positive for all the same reasons that Danielle mentioned. North Carolina also, I think just adding to that, has a collaborative practice law for pharmacists where we can get a clinical pharmacist practitioner license. And so we can independently prescribe and see patients. So then that really, you know, takes that sort of clinical practice or outpatient clinical practice a little bit further of like, we can independently see people and write things under our name. And we have a supervising physician that we work with. And so you really function like as an APP that's a little bit more focused on medications. And so I think that that sort of team dynamic is super helpful where we have our APPs who are definitely the physical assessment people. I'm not as equipped to do that in my training. But I can certainly help with like the prescribing and write things under my own name. And it makes things a little bit more efficient, a little bit more independent. And it's fun to work in that team dynamic like that.
Yeah. And I will similarly echo, you know, the importance of finding such a well-oiled team to join. And like Ryan was saying, you know, it might be hard to ascertain that on a, you know, if you're just like a brief interview, you know, you're not going to see the full picture, but don't be afraid to ask those questions of like, hey, how do you interface with your team and try to gauge like, you know, the oncology, whether it's, you know, pediatrics or adults or solid, liquid, transplant, you know, it's a relatively high pressure state that we work in. And so you want to be in a group and amongst people who are going to be able to support each other and work collaboratively for the best interest of the patient. When you acknowledge like the decisions that you're helping to inform are truly sometimes life and death decisions, and you need that kind of solid support around you. So if you're on the job hunt and you're looking for something, don't be afraid to ask those questions to try to gauge like, okay, how does that interdisciplinary relationship play out here at this site? I will say, much like Danielle was kind of gushing about her team, I have been incredibly lucky here at Mayo. Our PT Monk group is an incredibly cohesive unit. And I do, it's, you hear the phrase like a rising tide lifts all boats or something like that, where when everybody's flowing so nicely, everybody's succeeding, it's just kind of like elevating you to that next level. And truly it's not only that clinical practice, but then as you establish yourself as this expert in medication therapy and you're providing all this clinical goodness, and they say, well, hey, you know, like I've got this research idea, would you be willing to help? And that has been something on my personal side that's brought me a lot of also professional satisfaction and joy, not only in the patient care aspect, but getting to participate on some of that research side. And kind of the funny irony is, you know, one of my extra less fun tasks that I do is appeal medication denials. So if you can imagine, you know, we've got a 3-year-old with a targeted mutation and the drug for that mutation is only approved in non-small cell lung cancer. And so, of course, insurance doesn't want to pay, so we're appealing. But what I found is I'm so grateful that folks out there are reporting even these small experiences that then help me justify getting these therapies approved for my kids. So in turn, I then try to add to that literature to provide that where I can to hopefully help others. So that wasn't quite team dynamic, but all that to be said, all that kind of good professional flowing really does come out of a cohesive and solid unit.
Definitely. The only thing I would add is kind of from residency learning type of experience, I think the type of interactions that you have both with your preceptors and with your RPD can totally make or break your experience. it's all about finding that nice mix, that nice balance of someone that's going to support you, is going to understand the life experiences you're going through, understand the stresses and the, you know, different anxieties you're feeling, but at the same time is going to push you, that is going to recognize your potential, that's going to recognize your strengths and your areas for improvement, and is going to kind of give you very honest feedback. And so when you get that actionable feedback, but from someone that you know cares about you and wants to see you succeed, I think that can really make or break it. And I think the same thing plays true, whether that's coming from the top, with whether that's an RPD, an RPC, or even a preceptor or a team member, you know, having someone that sees your potential, that wants your input and is pushing you to, you know, look into things and to learn more about different subjects, recognizes your passions for different things and really works to strengthen those, I think can make a huge impact. So definitely when you're interviewing for residencies, both your first and second year, I think that kind of intangible relationship that you can see yourself building with those people is something that you could really, is something that you should really value and put towards the top of your list. And this is something that's kind of a bit abstract, but I had a quick question for you guys. I know you said it's very hard, especially from a short interview when you're looking at your first job, about how those team dynamics are going to work and how those relationships between the team are going to function. But do you have any questions that you would recommend asking during one of those short interviews? Or if you're on site, do you have any kind of green flags that you might be able to identify that this is a sign that it's probably a pretty good dynamic in terms of the team dynamics?
Yeah, I have one real quick easy one. Is like when you get your interview itinerary, who is on the itinerary? So when it is just pharmacy, like that's fine, but it's usually a green flag, as you put it, if it's like the director of the cell therapy program, right? So like obviously the physician group and those people outside of pharmacy have taken interest in that role and they really want somebody that they're going to be able to collaborate with. So not that it's a total red flag if that doesn't happen on the itinerary, but it is like a bonus. And so looking at who is scheduled where in your itinerary is sometimes like, or just who's on there in general, is an easy way to kind of like initially gauge that.
And I think to piggyback off of that, you know, if you get that itinerary and there is no, you know, physician, provider, someone outside of the Department of Pharmacy, it might be worthwhile to ask if you can meet with someone else and ask them. And my hope would be folks would be honest and forthcoming. You know, if you ask the question, hey, how do you engage with pharmacy? What are your thoughts of the pharmacists on the team? My hope is they would give you a straightforward, honest answer. And from that, you know, you can hopefully use that as sort of like a kernel of judgment to help either, whoa, you know, maybe they don't even know that there's a pharmacist, or yeah, they say that they won't make decisions without that individual. Yeah, that would be kind of a huge green flag. But I would say if possible, yeah, try to ask to see if you can speak with someone on the provider side too.
Yeah, I agree. And this is total anecdote, but I have found that APPs are like when you get to clinical teams and they are obviously not in a leadership role, tend to be a little bit more candid with you. So as you ask very candid, direct questions, you are likely to get like very open answers from those teams. So don't be afraid to ask those questions, and especially to the team themselves. That probably gives you the most insight.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just to quickly add to finish it up, I always like to see how different teams handle disagreements. So I always feel like that's a good question to ask of, like, you know, when your recommendation isn't accepted or if there's disagreement between the team members, how is that handled? Because I think how teams handle conflict gives you a really strong insight to the overall dynamics of the team, especially like Ryan mentioned, if you're meeting with some of the APPs or some of the other pharmacy staff, they might be a little bit more candid with you. So I think that's a good way to kind of ascertain some of the underlying team dynamics to kind of get a good feel of the place. So we kind of touched on all of like the team dynamics. And I think, Alexis, I like that you touched on research, because I think regardless of kind of role you're in, there's going to be an aspect of research. And I think something that I didn't appreciate as much when I was a resident was how much there is that you can do with research. I think when I was in my residency years, I was, you know, so focused on learning all of the material and checking all the boxes that I didn't really get the time to like really appreciate
how much impact there is from the research that we do. And so now that I'm actually in my practice role and get to choose my research projects and have more autonomy over them and get to see really what the research in action looks like and how it can impact patient care, it's been something that has been really rewarding. And, you know, I've been able to work with other members of our team and like develop research projects based on our own interests. We've been doing a lot of work here at our site as far as how we can identify patients going through CAR T that might be at high risk for some of the complications like cytokine release syndrome, ICANS, and how we can implement different prophylactic strategies. And so we've done kind of some work on developing kind of a risk calculator. And so that's something that I've been able to kind of spearhead with some of our other partners. So it's been really fun to be the PI on a research project that we're now kind of getting to the point of completion and really kind of digging through the data and getting the chance to present some of that data at ASTCT. So I think that's going to be really fun. So I think research is something that, like I said, I think is really worthwhile. And I didn't really have the full appreciation of it until I was in my role. So I'm just kind of curious what you guys are doing as far as research and how that factors into your, you know, day-to-day role and things like that. So.
Yeah, I think we have varying kind of interests in research across the four of us. You know, I would probably say that I'm more interested than some of my other colleagues because there's only so much time in the day. So I think it was just a natural split a little bit. And so people who are interested in research, I think there's a couple different avenues to go. So you can obviously go when we're talking about the day in the life, you have the academic side of things, which I think we're mostly focused on clinical pharmacy here. All of us are clinical pharmacists. And the academic side is going to be more that like grant writing, you know, published life, which I've done a little bit of and was not what I wanted to pursue. So there's a reason why I'm still in the clinical space. But I think that is one aspect of research. What I've done is I've partnered with one of our people at the school who is in that academic field to kind of develop a more of like a research platform where we've done a series of investigations over time, going all the way back to 2015, looking at things like genetic polymorphisms and 3A5 phenotype and like TAC metabolism. And from there has spun off into all of these different like kind of side quests. And from that has been done a lot of work with an infectious disease space and letermovir prophylaxis. And so we've kind of built this almost registry of patients over the years where we're able to do a lot of like high powered retrospective research. I think there's an opportunity for pharmacy that is probably even in the clinical space of doing more prospective clinical research that is really difficult to launch at most places. So we've done a few projects here, but the funding and the infrastructure and stuff is a bit of a challenge. So you have to kind of tease that out if that's something that you want to pursue over time. But having both pharmacy academic side and physician mentors who do this a lot has been super helpful. So their advice and their idea, hypothesis generation, and all of those things have been really invaluable. And I don't want to speak too long about it because I could probably talk about this for a while. But the other thing that I would advocate is like think about ways to leverage your learners. So like there's only so much time in the day and like research is not built into my job description. So anything that I touch with research is kind of like pro bono or like personally satisfying for me, right? So I enjoy that. But at the end of the day, like the work that I do, I still have to get those like job tasks done. So there are certain ways where you can expand the time of your day, and that's by getting more people involved. So as you have these ideas, some of them might be really great PGY2 projects, right? And you can have somebody take point and kind of guide that and give people that experience. Some might be like partner with a new practitioner, or you're a new practitioner, partner with somebody who's been doing this a while. And so you can like divide up the loads. You can also like get advice of how to move through things. You get that mentorship relationship or mentor-mentee relationship. And I think that's good ways to make your kind of research avenue, especially when it's not your primary job description, really fruitful. But it's taken me, you know, years of kind of going back and working with the same folks to develop something that I think works pretty well now. Sorry, that was more long-winded than I meant to be.
No, and I think you brought up some really good points, Ryan, and one of those being, you know, leveraging other folks. And what I found, you know, as pharmacists who've gone through residency, right, you know, like, okay, I've got my residency project and my residency project. And so I don't know about you folks, but it, like, when I walked out, I was like, all right, I have this one, like, very strict regimented view of what research was. But I've since learned, like, say our APP colleagues, they don't, or at least mine, like, didn't necessarily get that. And so as I started integrating myself in this role and started, you know, expressing interest in, oh, yeah, this would be a really great question, I found that our NPs were, like, super eager to participate in that because they had never kind of had, you know, they didn't quite have that background or experience in doing it. And so kind of like getting to serve as a mentor, not only for, you know, pharmacy residency projects, which is also wonderful, but like helping other interdisciplinary colleagues like our APPs succeed in research projects as well has been kind of a surprising avenue that I did not know would exist. Ryan, you also mentioned kind of the burden that is the prospective projects. And so I think I mentioned I am one of two in my role. There's myself and a partner, Catherine Martin. I mean, we're a tale of two different research strategies. I love the retrospective projects, but she is more eager for the prospective and kind of watching, you know, the time and development that goes into standing that up, which is truly a remarkable feat. And yeah, it does take a lot of time and dedicated effort to do that, but still very possible to do with a lot of support from various colleagues. So whether you're interested in the retrospective or you want to dip your toes into that prospective where you're getting these grants, you know, if the latter, certainly lots of mentorship and assistance, but you know, you can use the folks around you to help you if that's something that you find passion in.
And I'll make another little plug for ASTCT, because I think there's a lot of resource there that you can use if you're interested in research and, you know, both on multi-center side of things, mentor-mentee relationships. Also, like, you know, it just the act of writing things and getting them peer-reviewed, like, ASTCT has opportunities. So, you know, and if anybody's listening who is not focused on bone marrow transplant, so there'd be like, find an organization that the people that you're working with are part of that can potentially have opportunity for you, even if it's not like on the local level, right? It can expand your horizons a little bit.
I feel like I've already kind of addressed a lot of the things of like why I really enjoy my job. But I, you know, coming out of residency, this has been my first position. And so I really didn't have any idea like kind of what to expect. And being the only one in this practice site was a little bit daunting. But again, having the people around me that I have and also having very supportive leadership and giving me the autonomy to really kind of develop the role into what I've developed into now has been very, very rewarding as a new practitioner. And then obviously the patients are at the center of everything that we do. So getting to have that direct patient interaction, and there's just something special about being able to care for cancer patients and see them through the hardest time of their life and being able to support them and be a resource for them. That's always going to be what keeps me going back day to day. And then I've always been somebody that likes a challenge. And so like being able to, you know, always having to stay on top of the literature and continually learning new things is something that I've always really enjoyed. And I think, like you said, it's just something that I've always looked forward to and continue to look forward to, that there's always going to be something new to learn in this field. So I think that's what keeps me back coming day after day.
Yeah, I think we'd all definitely resonate and agree with that. You know, and I, when I first got interested in oncology, it was like a scientific academic interest, right? It was like my first year of pharmacy school. Hadn't really like interacted much with patients. And I was like, this is fascinating. Like this is, at the time we didn't have all of our cellular therapy. So it was like traditional chemotherapy. And I was like, this is wild. Like, I can't believe this is how we cure people's cancer. And that then got to seeing pharmacy cancer care in action. And it was like, oh, these are people, and this is really important. And that kind of like solidified it for me. That, like, this is what I want to do. And then moved into like being exposed to bone marrow transplant. And it was, there's something interesting to me and very unique about transplant cell therapy, where you both have the acuity
where people are kind of the sickest there are in the hospital aside from the ICU. But you also have the longitudinal care, seeing these people over and over and over again, even on the inpatient side. And then when you get into clinic, then it's like, you know, they're kind of with your clinic at least 6 months, if not years, that you're seeing them over and over and over again. And so it's a beautiful opportunity to both have that acuity, if that's something you like, but also have a longitudinal relationship building with patients over time that I think, you know, a lot of those other high acuity pharmacy roles don't have. And that's what kind of hooked me in bone marrow transplant or cellular therapy. And obviously, I'm still here.
Yeah, and I think for me, when I got into pediatric oncology, I wanted to help these kids. You know, that's never, not that cancer is anything. Nobody is asking for that. Nobody's bringing that upon themselves. But these kids are in a very vulnerable position, and their families as well. And so I wanted to kind of use everything that I could to make it better, whether it's, you know, helping assist in the regimen selection or just from a very basic, you know, like, how are we going to get this medication to this child or in this child's body? But the other, you know, kind of the where I find that professional joy and satisfaction is kind of like Ryan, you were saying, how you get that longitudinal exposure. And this, as one who's got the finger in all the pots of the solid tumor and liquid tumor and transplant and non-malignant, on the clinic side, you really do see these patients throughout the entirety of their journey. And so kind of getting to play a role in that kind of high level management of these patients where, you know, when I left the inpatient side, I thought I was going to miss that acuity of like, oh yeah, if I want a lab, I can just order the lab and see the lab very quickly and intervene right here, right now. And I thought, oh, the clinic is going to be too slow. Am I actually going to like this? But at the end of the day, I absolutely love being able to kind of be so closely embedded with the providers and so closely involved in the care of these patients. That's like, oh yeah, you know, we started with regimen A. We're now on regimen B. We're going with C, but we've got a backup plan for D. And so getting to practice at the top of my license and really use all those skills that you've worked so hard to build over time and actually like put them in action to benefit these kids and benefit their families. And that's definitely like the absolute thing that, like you said, keeps me coming back for more.
And I would just say when it comes to residency, the best parts of it, I think, are the diversity and all the different intricacies that are involved. So when you think about it, you're going from all these different diverse disease states. You know, I had thoracic, then back to back, I had pediatric oncology. Then after that, I had malignant hematology, then bone marrow transplant. So many cool things, and they all have so much detail to look into. And you get dedicated time to look into all of it, come into the, you know, look up information on presentations, put together, you know, interesting different presentations on new things that's evolving, journal clubs that just came out. And that's one of the best parts of this space, I think, is in oncology. It's so rapidly evolving. There's always something new to kind of keep on top of, keep track of. I think back to my ID rotation, of course, nothing against ID, but you were thinking, looking at the IDSA guidelines, and you're like, all right, the last one was published 15 years ago. We're going off of that. You know, you look at NCCN guidelines, that stuff is published, you know, sometimes twice a year, three times a year. It's crazy how fast things change. So I love that amount of kind of innovation that's happening, all these cool cellular therapies, of course, and also, you know, all the different types of things you can see and every different thing that you look at, there's all these little details and intricacies, not only that, but the history as well, because you might think, you know, why do we do this so differently from something that seems very similar? But there's all this historical context that goes into it. Why were things studied this way? What things were studied? And all that knowledge goes into it. And so there's always things to learn and there's always kind of new things to look into, which I definitely think is the best part of it. And also kind of the well-rounded nature of the residency and the fact that you get all this clinical experience, you get the presentation experience, you get the research experience, you know, all this kind of comes together to give you a very well-rounded year, which is something that's really exciting. But challenges-wise, I would say that there's two big challenges, I would say. The first is that you're going to feel very busy. And at times, if you don't know how to deal with it, you're going to feel burnt out. And so when people talk about good work-life balance, they talk about, yes, you might have something that's very fulfilling at work, that's very busy, but you enjoy it. But when you're done with that, you separate it, you come home, and you have that separation between work and life. And that's something that's very important for people's well-being. And sometimes with residency, that can be a challenge because you come home, but you have presentations that are due every 2 to 3 weeks. You have research where deadlines come due very often. And so if you don't do a good job of either keeping on top of things or kind of compartmentalizing some of those things, you're going to feel like your work is really bleeding into your life, and you're going to see a lot of your personal time go away. And so those kind of time management skills are so important to make sure that you still have those time and the energy to do the things you enjoy to maintain your well-being. And the second challenge I would say is that because you're going into so many of these new spaces that you don't have experience with, you're going to feel very dumb. And so I always think about that little graph of like confidence and knowledge. And it's kind of that inverse, you know, bell graph where at the top, you don't really know anything, but you're like, oh, I can learn it. You know, you feel decently confident. And the more you learn, your confidence just goes down as you realize how much stuff you don't know, how much, you know, the depth of how deep it goes and how much you have left to learn. And so like slowly and until you finally get to the bottom after a couple months to a couple years of training, and then slowly but surely that confidence comes up as you start to learn it. And so being comfortable as a resident, knowing that there's so much you don't know, there's so many things that you do have to look into if you're asked, but just being comfortable with that is an important skill to learn. So those are a couple of benefits, but also a couple of the challenges that I've noticed so far.
Yeah, Christopher, I'm glad you touched on those, because I will say, giving the perspective of somebody who's only a couple of years into practice, that confidence and like that comfortability, it doesn't come automatically once you get that EGY2 completion letter, you know, or certificate. I would say it took me a good like 6 months to a year to feel like really comfortable in my role and really build some of that clinical confidence. And so that's definitely something that, you know, you work through as you transition from the resident to into your first kind of actual role post-residency. I also like that you touched on burnout, because I think that is still something that I know that I still kind of struggle with in some aspects, because I am an N of one here at the clinic. So I, like I said, with all the roles that I have, finding that work-life balance has been a challenge. And I think it's something, maybe it took me a little bit longer than I would have liked to recognize, is being able to speak up and like go to leadership about like, you know, these are the challenges that I'm facing. This is where I'm struggling, and, you know, this is where I'm, you know, having some burnout. But I think that also, like, once I did speak up and, you know, working with management, we actually are currently recruiting for an additional BMT, malignant heme pharmacist. And so speaking up can have real impact, which has been nice. And I think other challenges I think a lot of people have faced that I'm sure you guys can relate to is just the state of healthcare in the U.S. today. And so, you know, challenges with insurance and, you know, getting access to medications for patients, it's can be very frustrating on a day-to-day basis, where you have a medication that you have, you know, strong hunch or certainty that would be effective for your patient. Because of insurance regulations, your patient gets denied, or you have to jump through hoop after hoop after hoop. And so having to go to a patient and say, like, we have a medication for you, we just can't get access to it, can be really frustrating. And then also kind of with the state of healthcare right now, there's almost access to too much information, and there's not enough stopgaps in there to like have a handle of like accuracy of information. And that has led to a lot of challenges with patients, you know, understanding why we do the things we do, why we use the drugs that we do. And so there's so much misinformation out there with social media. And so like trying to be a resource for your patients and a champion for your patients, but also respecting autonomy, like that can be a real challenge when there's so much misinformation out there and they're coming to you with questions about things like ivermectin or, you know, doubting vaccines. And part of it is because they're getting conflicting information from, you know, reputable sources. So it becomes challenging. And like I said, that can be a frustration that's saddening, I guess, for lack of a better word. But yeah. I don't know what other challenges you guys want to enroll.
Yeah, Danielle, I think you really hit the nail on the head there. The insurance. Yeah, I think I alluded to the fact that I love the pharmacy put out or pharmacy, the pharmacist articles that kind of help support these appeal letters that I have to write. But man, like repeated denials on meds where we have strong evidence for that, it just, it's like a moral injury. Yeah, it's like, it just really, really gets me deep where not a lot of things can. And so that is certainly one of the challenges in my role. And then, as you mentioned, you know, about the kind of medical misinformation, I've got an impending video visit about fenbendazole and crizotinib here shortly, where it's just, yeah, you want the patients to know, like, yes, I am your advocate. I am on your side. We are on the same team. We want to do what's best for you and your child. But kind of leveraging that trust to say, hey, you know, with all of your best interests in mind, I do not think that this therapy with no clinical data to support it and all these concerns with interactions with the very real chemotherapy that we are giving your child, you know, those are never my favorite visits to have, but, you know, necessary to ensure that, you know, the efforts that we're doing are being undertaken in the safest way possible. But again, still working with the families to let them have that autonomy, because, you know, they in their mind, you know, they are doing what's best for their child. And so kind of partnering with families, but navigating that relationship is also a challenge that is very real.
I mean, I don't have a ton to add. I did spend 2.5 hours on the phone with an insurance company this morning. So I definitely feel that. But I feel like we shouldn't leave it on such a somber note. So maybe a question for Chris is, as you're moving into, you know, your first job and coming out of residency, what haven't we covered that would be useful for you thinking about the day of the life of oncology pharmacy in the transplant cellular therapy space?
I think it would depend who we ask. You know, students that are thinking about residency, are we asking PGY1 residents that are thinking about oncology, or are we asking PGY2 residents that are thinking, you know, do I want an inpatient versus outpatient? What are the benefits of each? You know, how important is face-to-face interaction with patients? Can you still get that with inpatient? Do you still get to see the level of acuity on the outpatient side? And then also kind of talking a little bit about solid tumor versus BMT, Malheme, how those types of kind of job responsibilities change as well. I'm sure some residents might be interested in that.
Yeah. So I think bone marrow transplant and cellular therapy is the best. I am obviously biased, but that is still the correct answer. But in reality, I think there's good reasons for that. One is, you know, on the inpatient side, to your point, I do think, like, I meet the people in the inpatient service. You know, we meet all of them who come through. I try and meet them on admission. We see them when we're rounding. We discharge counsel everybody before they go. So I think you can have, depending on where you're at and depending on what your independent practice style is, a patient relationship development on the inpatient service. I don't think there's any barrier to that. It just depends on who you are and where you're practicing and what you want. On the outpatient side, we certainly send a lot of people immediately to the unit or to the emergency room from clinic, you know, when we have rapids in clinic. So like in this space, that's going to be inevitable. So another checkbox for bone marrow transplant cell therapy, because I think you can get a little bit of everything everywhere you go. The other thing is, like, we assume kind of all of their care, right? So we are in a very unique spot where we're managing diabetes, we're managing hypertension, we're acutely managing their clots, you know, and all of these different things in this space, because we functionally become their primary providers for this duration that they are a transplant cell therapy patient. So I think it gives you an opportunity to, like, keep active those, like, medicine skills that is the root of everything that we do. So again, I know I'm super biased. I do think it has been the most rewarding decision I've made with my career is going into bone marrow transplant and cellular therapy. So even if you're like, I don't know about it, I would say give it a shot, get exposed. I know not everybody loves it as much as I do, but at least dip the toe and see what you think. Yeah.
Yeah, I would just say to kind of echo what Ryan said, I think I knew very early on in pharmacy school that oncology was the path that I wanted to go, but I still did as much as I could to expose myself to different opportunities and things like that. And I think regardless of where you are in your pharmacy journey, whether that's still in school, in PGY1 and PGY2,
anybody that's interested in oncology, I just highly recommend looking out for experiences that you can expose yourself to. Though I think once you are in kind of this environment and you get exposed to this patient population, I think you understand exactly why it's so special. And I think a lot of students and residents are scared of oncology because I know the drugs are hard to say, but I would say that, you know, if you really take the time to expose yourself, I think you'll understand like it's why it's such rewarding work and why we do what we do. So I think that would be my biggest recommendation for anyone that's interested in oncology is, you know, take the chance, get yourself some experience one way or another. That's through research, through rotations, what have you. But I think once you do, I think you'll see why it's so worthwhile.
Yeah, fully agree. When I was in pharmacy school, I was definitely like oncology, oncology, oncology. That's why I went to be a pharmacist. But pediatrics was never even on my radar. I just happened, like my first epi rotation, I got put on a gen peds and I stepped foot in that hospital. I was like, okay, these are my people. And so your perspective changes, right, with increasing exposures. And as Danielle said, you know, I think a lot of folks are, yeah, they may hear things about oncology being so hard and so difficult. And not to say that what we do is cupcakes and not difficult, but, you know, it is one area where there's so much knowledge that's constantly evolving. And there is so much support. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, like ASTCT is an incredible organization with an incredibly engaged pharmacy SIG. There's also HOPA, which is the Hem-Onc Pharmacy Association, which is also incredibly engaging. And there's such an awesome community surrounding Hem-Onc Pharmacy that, again, like super biased, I would never, ever leave, you know, this practice area where it's rewarding. From a patient care standpoint, it's rewarding from a professional standpoint. And it truly is, it's, you know, where I want to spend my life. Give it a try.
That wraps up our look into a day in the life of an oncology pharmacist. A huge thanks to our guests for sharing their experiences and insights. And we hope you enjoyed this behind the scenes glimpse into the impact pharmacists have on patient care every day. From all of us here at Pharmacy Times, happy holidays, and we'll see you in the new year with more stories, insights, and conversations from the world of pharmacy.